Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 18th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with artists Tim Ortiz and Andriana Donahue about their upcoming classes at the Canvas. Sarah Lehnert and Michaela Levy will be here with details about Saturday's Baby and Mom Expo. We'll get a preview of Coming Out, stories about action and reaction with tellers Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove. And Kate Prossine and Kristen Bartlett will be here to tell us about Parents for a Safe Graduation. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nine tribes are urging the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to deny permits for a proposed coal export terminal near Bellingham, Washington. Steve Jackson has more.
The tribal representatives met last week to oppose the Gateway Pacific Terminal at Cherry Point. That project would export as much as 48 million tons of coal each year from Montana and Wyoming to Asia. The Lummi Nation says the project would disrupt treaty-protected fishing rights and harm sacred sites. But the project is also finding opposition from the Spokane tribe, some 300 miles to the east. Twala Abrahamson-Swan, the natural resources director for the Spokanes, says they have a history of opposition to coal-fired power plants, including one proposed near Creston, Washington, years ago.
We're one of the five tribes in the nation that pursued a Class 1 airshed redesignation, and that was to prevent our reservation from the impacts of burning coal for power. Our actions prevented the construction of a coal-fired power plant that was proposed in 1983.
Abrahamson-Swan says besides concerns with the effect on the air from burning coal, the tribe is also worried about the potential for increased coal train traffic in the Spokane area. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The Corporation for Southeast Alaska's Tlingit and Haida Indians reports an increase in income in 2014 after heavy losses the previous year, but critics say money still being lost. Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Sea Alaska has around 22,000 shareholders, the most of any of the corporations created by 1971's Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It lost more than $50 million in 2013, but it came back strong last year with $15 million in profits, according to its just-released annual report. CEO Anthony Malott says it's the start of a significant recovery.
We believe 2014 was a great turnaround that created a stable platform to lead to the progress that we need for the corporation.
But Sea Alaska still lost money last year. The profit only comes when funds from a shared pool of similar Native corporations' natural resource earnings is included. That translates into the smallest amount of business and investment income going to dividends in about a dozen years. Carlton Smith is a former board member.
From a shareholder perspective, I think calling 2014 a turnaround year is a bit of a stretch.
Sea Alaska sold off a profitable plastics partnership to help fund new acquisitions closer to home. It's considering natural foods and data analytics. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Business and tribal leaders are meeting in Deadwood, South Dakota this week. As Jim Kent reports, they're looking at success and challenges in Indian-owned business.
Sessions and information at the biennial South Dakota Indian Business Conference may help those interested in starting, maintaining, or assisting a Native-owned business, says Tanya Fiddler. As director of the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation's Four Bands Community Fund, Fiddler is well aware of the ups and downs of creating and sustaining a Native American business. Yet Fiddler says running a successful business is actually nothing new for Native Americans. Special Trustee for the Department of the Interior, Vince Logan, is scheduled to attend the three-day business conference. Logan notes that legal hurdles, along with societal differences, can make establishing a business within Indian country more of a challenge than it would be in mainstream America.
We have many large tribes with large populations, small populations. We have large landholding tribes. So even when we say Indian country, that's not clear.
As a Native American businessman himself, Logan sees the possibility for success within Indian country while also stressing the need for new ideas and innovations. I'm Jim Kent.
I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 18th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined in the studio now by Tim Ortiz and Andreana Donahue. Welcome, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming down today. So you both teach. You're both artists and teachers over there at the Canvas, and it looks like you have a bunch of fun stuff coming up. Who wants to start?
Yeah, we do have a lot of fun stuff coming up, Scott. We've got a couple of classes. I'm teaching a grids and patterns class, which is all about using grids and patterns in various different art media. It's a really great element of art making, a lot of fun. We're going to be making some 2D work and some ceramic art with patterns on it, and learn how to make different kinds of patterns. And then, Adriana, you got a drawing class.
Yeah, I'll be teaching landscape drawing. That starts June 1st, and it runs through June 22nd. From 6:30 to 9 p.m. And I'll be going over materials and techniques for landscape drawing in graphite and ink on paper, and then also talking about important landscape artists throughout art history.
Interesting. And Andreana, what's target age group for your class, would you say?
I would say any age. I mean, it would be ideal for beginners or people with experience in drawing who want to expand on their current knowledge.
Okay. How about you, Tim, for the grids and patterns class?
Yeah, that's any age also. I mean, mostly adults, although I do already have a couple signed up in their teens. But it should be a very accessible class. It'll be a lot of very specific kinds of projects about teaching how to create patterns. So,
why are we so drawn to grids and patterns?
Well, they're really important to me personally. In my own work, I use a lot of grids, and it's because they create a sense of order that allows a lot of freedom in a way, which is really exciting. So you can create sort of anything you want if you can make it repeat and have that sense of order that comes from the repetition and the structure of the grid. It allows the viewer to kind of focus on everything else about it, which is really great. So there's lots of different ways to do it that we'll be covering in the class. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like it. Andreana, what drew you to landscape art?
It's a very romantic artistic pursuit, going out into the landscape. And Juneau is a really great place for that, you know, surrounded by the beautiful mountains and glaciers.
Okay.
Yeah, and speaking of that, we've got a workshop coming up that is all about that sort of romantic pursuit, the Bound and Plain workshop, which is a weekend thing we'll be offering twice, starting, I believe it's the 6th, it'll be the first one. And what we're going to do is it'll be a two-part thing on Saturday and Sunday. And so on Saturday, we'll be working with Andreana, learning how to bind a book to create a sketchbook, and then learning also a bit about naturalist painting and drawing. And then on Sunday, we'll be going up Perseverance Trail and doing some plein air watercolor and drawing in that beautiful landscape, which has been particularly beautiful lately with this wonderful weather.
Yeah, and of course, on that day, the weather will be just like this, hopefully.
Yes, we're hoping so. We're hoping to offer more plein air stuff if the weather stays this nice in the future.
Yeah.
Right, and so we have two of those workshops. The first one is June 6th and 7th from 5 to 8 p.m., and then the next one is June 20th and 21st, 9 a.m. to noon.
And Andreana, tell me a little bit about the process of putting together a sketchbook.
Well, it's pretty simple once you know how to use the materials, and it's a really great way of creating your own sketchbooks, picking your own papers, combining drawing paper and watercolor paper, so you can do both of those things.
Absolutely. Sounds like a nice combination. Make your own book and then head out and fill it up with art. Right. Sounds like fun. If people want more information, where should they go?
The website, the canvas, canvasarts.org.
Or they can call the studio. The number is 586-1750.
And if you already talked about this, let me know, but some kids' classes and also some regular Saturday drawing classes?
Yeah, we have, it's not exactly a class, just sort of a drawing session for anybody who's interested in doing some drawing on Saturdays from 10 to 12. This will be every Saturday. It's a drop-in thing. You don't have to sign up in advance. That's just $20. We'll have a model in some cases, a still life set up in other cases, and Andreana and I will be there to support with, you know, guidance. Materials will be provided for that as well. And that'll be followed also, there'll be critiques offered on Saturdays, which will be, I think, a really important thing for the community. Those will be free. This will be sort of like the unfinished objects thing that was offered a little while back, where people can bring in whatever they're working on. We encourage artists to attend who are working in any media to show their work and get feedback from fellow artists. We'll just be there to mediate that sort of thing so that we can share with each other about what we're doing creatively in the community. And then the kids' classes, which are starting in July, are covering a wide variety of subjects, paper mache, mask making, oil painting, watercolor drawing. And those are week-long classes, $125 for kids.
Okay, going back to the critique thing for a sec, if somebody's out there and they're sort of on the fence about going to that, it can be sort of intimidating, right, to have your work critiqued. How do you make it so it's a productive, positive atmosphere?
Well, we, Andreana and I are art writers, and we love art. We love looking at art, and it is so important for any artist to really to be critical, and not critical in the sense of putting themselves down focusing on those things that are unsuccessful about their work, but just to be clear about what their intentions are and how they can achieve those intentions. And so those are the things we focus on, those kinds of constructive ideas about what are you trying to do, what do you want from your work, and how can you get there, how are you getting there, what's working, and what should you do more, and what are the things that are not important about your work that maybe you should avoid, those kinds of ideas.
Okay.
And if anything, it's really great practice talking about your work in front of other people. And then we both have a wide knowledge of art history and contemporary artists, so we can recommend artists to look at other artists that they might not be aware of.
Yeah, this is something we've been doing with the Reach artists in the studio over the past several weeks, and it's not a scary thing at all. It's a lot of fun. It's a really great positive discussion.
All right, Andreana Donahue and Tim Ortiz, thank you both for coming in today. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, no, that's it, Scott. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Theater presents a fresh new comedy, Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England, an adult comedy about jealousy, small-town politics, and alternative kinship structures. A comedy of errors ensues as a multi-generational love triangle, museum dioramas, and quirky townspeople give voice to this funny exploration of love and extinction. Seven Mammoths runs from May 1st through the 24th. For more information and tickets, visit Hearthside Books, the Jack, PerseveranceTheater.org, or 463-TIXS.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 18th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined in the studio now by Sarah Leonard and Michaela Levy. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Sarah, did I get your last name right that time?
You sure did.
Yes. Well, thanks for coming in. And you two are organizing the Baby and Mom Expo Beyond the Bump this Saturday. Tell us about it.
So this is kind of Sarah's brainchild that I've just kind of jumped on the train with her. And we're really excited about it. It's kind of gone from being a small vendor fair to a bigger event at the Jack this weekend. And there will be lots of small businesses that are all related to moms and babies, as well as some local resources so that parents can come and kind of have all this information in one place and get a lot of resources in one day.
And so what parents will benefit from this most with the kids of what ages, would you say?
Pretty much full spectrum from, like, people who are trying to conceive and start their family through probably the first 5 years or so. It is gauged more towards younger children, but there will be a wide spectrum, wide range of products available as well as resources.
Sarah, what inspired you to begin this?
Well, my sister and I started a little boutique several years ago, and we expanded into children's clothing, and it's just been a big hit here in Juneau. We have a store in Anchorage, and then we do a lot of events here year-round in Juneau, and after having a child about a year ago, I started shopping a lot with Michaela's store, Fiddleheads, and pretty soon I was just like, you know, we need to have a big event that's all about these cool new businesses in Juneau that you can shop right here, shop local, you don't have to go online, pay shipping, they're all right here. So, yeah, after I met with her, it just became even a bigger idea, very comprehensive to our local community.
And remind us the name of your business.
I am with Mabel McKinley.
And where are you located?
We are located in Anchorage.
Okay.
However, I'm one of the owners and I moved here a couple years ago. So I've been doing year-round events here in Juneau.
Pop-up boutiques.
Okay. And how about you, Michaela?
I own Fiddleheads and Ferns. It's maternity and baby boutique. And then I'm also a birth and postpartum doula.
Okay, and where's your store located?
We are located next to the bowling alley, 607 West 7th Street, the building to the left of the bowling alley.
Okay, and so this expo is going to be on Saturday at the Jack. When does it start?
Starts at 10. It'll be from 10 to 5, and we'll have all of the vendors set up, and we're planning to have hourly workshops or talks on different topics. A couple that have been nailed down so far, we'll have a meet and greet with birth professionals in Juneau, so you can come and meet some of the doctors and pediatricians, midwives, doulas, and just kind of mingle and have some tea and appetizers. And then we'll have a class about baby wearing and a class on cloth diapering.
What's baby wearing?
So, like, baby carriers that you can carry and hike with your baby, and just different ways to use them. And we'll have samples so that people can try on different carriers and learn which one fits their body best and what is most comfortable.
And I imagine it's going to be a kid-friendly atmosphere.
Very much so. And we plan on having an area of the Jack set up for nursing moms so they can sit down and feed their babies. And if they need to change their diaper or if they have small toddlers that need to run around, then it's a very friendly environment to bring your kids to, for sure.
Seems very informative. As business owners and mothers, may I ask, what's been most surprising or what's something that you wish you knew going into this? What would sort of wisdom or advice would you impart on our listening prospective parents?
That's a good one.
I think, you know, Juneau is like the most baby-friendly place, and I made so many friends once I had my baby that just talking with people and going out in the community and actually putting yourself out there when you have a baby, it's actually a lot easier than doing it by yourself.
Right.
Because you can smile at another mom and say, hi, day, and they'll come up and introduce you. And they'll also lead you to really cool ideas of where to get new baby stuff or what to do with your baby, hike your baby with your baby.
Mm-hmm.
Just lots of...
Yeah, networking with all the different play groups and new mom, new parents groups, and getting out there and not feeling isolated and making friends.
Well, it sounds like Saturday would be a great opportunity to start that.
A great opportunity. And one of the big things that's going to happen if you come to the expo and you stay until 4:30, there's going to be lots of giveaways. We're giving away over $500 worth of products at the end of the show, the expo. So stay till 4:30 or come back.
And is there an admission fee?
It's free. And we also want to mention that we're going to have a fashion show at 2 o'clock. So we are featuring lots of local businesses that cater to moms, people with the bumps, growing babies, and also to babies and children. So it'll be featuring lots of cool new things for fashion.
Sounds good. If folks want more information, where should they go?
We have a Facebook page, Juno Mom and Baby Expo, and or you can also contact Sarah or I. We both have Facebook pages for our businesses. Fiddleheadsandferns.com is my website. And Mabel McKinley has a Facebook page.
Mabel McKinley Juno, or you can go onto Facebook and go to Juno Baby Expo. Lots of information there.
Sounds like fun. This Saturday, 10 to 5 at the Jack. Sarah and Michaela, thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything we're missing?
Just say we have 20-plus vendors joining us. It's a pretty big deal.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great time.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
I'd walk for miles, cry or smile, for my mama and daddy. I want them to know how I feel. My love is real for my mama and daddy. I want them to know I love them so. In my heart, your tears start, 'cause I'm happy. And I pray every day for mom and happy and smile. I'd walk for miles, cry or smile, for my mama and daddy. I want them to know I love them so. Fight in wars, do all the chores for my mama and daddy. I want them to live on till they're called. I'd work and slave and never rave to my mama and daddy, because I know I owe them my all. In my heart, joy to start, 'cause I'm happy, and I pray every day for mom and happy, and each night I'd walk for miles, cry or smile, for my mama and daddy, because I know I owe them my all.
This October, voters will elect assembly and school board members. I'm Mark Wheeler, and I served in the assembly from 2000 to 2005. Holding that office was a life-changing experience. You can do it, too. Come to a free workshop on how to run for election on Saturday, June 6th. Register at junolwv.org. Space is limited, so don't wait. There's no better way to give back to our community than serving in public office. Brought to you by CBJ and the League of Women Voters.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 18th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined now in the studio by Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove. Welcome you two.
Hey, Scott.
A couple of the driving forces between coming out stories about action and reaction.
You bet.
And you are going to perform and film this. Remind me when?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow at 360.
At 360. Doors open at 5.
And seating at 5:30. Doors will close at 5:30.
And admission, cost of admission?
Pay as you can, and please be generous.
So, yeah, what is this about?
Exactly.
So, it's two storytellers.
One gay.
One straight.
One came out.
One was not ready for the news.
Mm-hmm. And how was the story inspired? And let's go back just a little, because you've done this once before.
That's correct.
Both of you.
Yeah.
But this is reloaded, new and improved.
Totally. We did this in November of 13 to a full house down at the Nickelodeon to a wonderful reception.
Got good reviews.
Good reviews. And, you know, it was our first time to do this. And anytime you perform for the first time, we got good response, but we saw the holes. And so it was a chance for us to make it better, tighter, and much more fun.
Excellent. Now let's back up even a little bit more. What inspired that first show or this story that you tell on stage?
Tom's sister inspired his stories, and the three that he tells are in reaction to his sister coming out. Mine are personal stories of my own.
But what really started is that I had these stories in me, and I had them. They were good stories, and it was like, how can I use this to actually, make an impact? And that's when I approached Pat, because I was like, you know, this seems to be a natural fit. And so we started at that assumption, and we worked from there. And it's turned out that our stories actually dovetail extremely well together, and that was
purely coincidental.
Not purely, but let's put it this way. There wasn't a whole lot of planning on who was going to do what. We kind of set some parameters, dug in, and what we got has turned out really well.
Now, you both wear a couple different hats in this community. I saw you identified here, Tom, as a monologist at one point.
Monologist?
Is that right?
I would have said monologist, but
much better. Thank you. Thank you. Monologist. Pat, what keeps you busy in town?
What keeps me busy is the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and the Juno Interfaith Council and the Juno Community Garden and my quilting. That's what keeps me busy.
And when you're not being a monologist, what keeps you busy?
I'm a full-time dad, part-time computer programmer. I'm on the board of Mudrooms, the storyboard of Mudrooms. And I'm a writer. I'm a passionate writer and a storyteller. And you mentioned monologist. So when I started this moving from a writer to a storyteller, one of the things that I hit was, oh, you're a storyteller? You know, is this Itsy Bitsy Spider and you telling kids stories? And I said, no, I tell stories about lesbian comedians. I tell stories that are challenging. I do death and dying. These are the stories of who we are as adults and people. So I was trying to come up with a better word, and I'm just back at storyteller.
Why is storytelling important? Why is it important to you, both of you individually?
My theory is that storytelling is a part of who we are as Homo sapiens. It's how we've transferred information for millennia. And storytelling, real storytelling, is a part of us. And so in the world that we are now connected all the time electronically, we're rarely connected in real time and sharing those stories. And people react. People want to hear it. We have this built-in need, and it's been fun playing with it. because people do respond.
And people will say, I can't tell a story. I said, you probably do every night when you sit down at supper and somebody says, what you do today, and then you elaborate on whatever the heck that it is happened today. And myself, you know, I grew up listening to my father, Charlie, sit at the head of the table and start going on about this story or that story, and you know, nobody wanted to leave the table because you didn't want to miss. You didn't want to miss the story. You didn't want to miss the story. So I think that it is an integral part of our lives. It's just whether or not we identify it as such. But we all have stories, and we all tell them.
And here you are attaching that to, you know, stories of coming out,
mm-hmm.
which can be very pivotal and important part of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And somebody had said to me, it says, you know, this isn't, you know, it may have been topical back in your day, but now it's not so much. And I don't believe that. You know, there are still lots of people that have a hard time. And I think this speaks to it. It speaks to it of having courage to do it. And how does our ending go? Pat, why don't you give our ending?
Yeah, sure, Tom. It's all right. Our ending is that we are standing at a time of great cultural change, and there are lots of theories about why this change is happening, and we think that part of the reason for the change is stories, personal stories.
Yeah, people are coming out. They put a personal face on the LGBT community, and it breaks down those barriers. So it takes courage for people to come out, but when they do, those stories change hearts.
All right, and if you want to hear and see these in
please,
person.
Please, Tuesday.
Tomorrow.
That's tomorrow, the 19th, and we're at 360 Studio, KTOO. Seating opens at 5, and the show starts at 5:30. Pay as you can.
Okay, storytellers, among other things, monologist.
You could say raconteur.
That's you got it.
That's more of French feel to it.
Tom Cosgrove, Pat McClure, thanks for coming in. 5 p.m. tomorrow at 360. Pay as you can. Coming out stories about action and reaction. Are we missing anything, you two?
No, other than this is going to be broadcast, too. That's one of the things we're looking forward to. It'll be broadcast. It'll be available on the Internet and to be able to listen to also. So.
All right, and stay tuned to KTOO.org or 360 North, and you'll be able to probably access mm-hmm. those through there. And you also have a website, don't you, Tom?
I do. NearlyNormalAlaska.com. Because, after all, I am a nearly normal Alaskan.
I once heard somebody say that normal is just a setting on a dryer.
Yes.
Thanks, you two.
All right, thanks,
take care, Scott.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 18th of May, 2015. It was on this day in 1860 in Chicago, the Republican National Convention, Abraham Lincoln was nominated for president. He was nominated in part because he took a moderate position on slavery. Two of his rivals, William Seward and Edward Bates, supported the complete eradication of slavery across the country. Lincoln was only in favor of curbing the expansion of slavery and limiting it to the South. And he had won over doubters from the East, Lincoln had, with his speech in New York City just 3 months before. 1,500 New Yorkers went to see him at Cooper Union. They were astonished at how awkward and ungainly Lincoln was, which then made them even more astonished at how articulate he was as a speaker. It's the birthday of Tina Fey, born in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, 1970. Mother worked in a brokerage firm. Her father was a university grant proposal writer. She was a high school honor student in the drama club, performed in a summer theater group, went to the University of Virginia, studied playwriting and acting, moved to Chicago after college, 1992. She took night classes at the Improv Training Center, the Second City, worked at the YMCA during the day, then started performing with the Second City. She traveled around the country, did 8 shows a week. 3 years later, hired as a sketch writer for Saturday Night Live, and she quickly rose to head writer. went on to write and star in her own comedy series, 30 Rock, came out with a memoir in 2011, Bossy Pants, went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And in response to people who said that women are not funny, Tina Fey said, "I don't like Chinese food, but I don't write articles trying to prove that it doesn't exist." It's the birthday of the director and film producer Frank Capra, born in Sicily in 1897, came to Los Angeles as a boy, worked odd jobs at the Columbia Studios, and began making his films in 1928. It Happened One Night, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, You Can't Take It With You, Arsenic and Old Lace, and It's a Wonderful Life in 1946. Frank Capra, who said, "I wanted to glorify the average man, not the guy at the top, not the politician, not the banker, just the ordinary guy whose strength I admire, whose survivability I admire." Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin, The Veil of May. No more than a week, and the leaves have all come out on the ash trees. Now they are more than half open on the ancient walnuts, standing alone in the field, reaching up through the mute amazement of age. They have uncurled on the oaks from hands small as the eyelids of birds, and the morning light shines through them and waits while the hawthorn gleams white against the green in the shadow. In a moment, the river has disappeared. Down in the valley, the curve of sky gliding slowly from before, not seeming to move. It will not be seen again now, a while, from this place on the ridge, but over it the summer will flow and not seem to be moving. A poem by W.S. Merwin, The Veil of May, from his collected poems, 1996 to 2011, published by Library of America, and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to A June Afternoon here on a beautiful Monday afternoon, May 18th, 2015. Currently 71 degrees at the Juneau Airport. Can you believe it, you two?
We're loving it.
That's the voice of Kate Pressing, and Chris, she's joined by Kristen Bartlett. They are both proud parents of seniors, high school seniors, and they are part of the Juneau Parents for a Safe Graduation. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, so this Sunday is graduation. What an exciting time. And you both have seniors graduating.
We do.
You're very invested in a safe graduation.
Yes,
we
that's
are.
Very true. Not only for our own kids, but the others.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And this group is called Parents for Safe Graduation, but it really should be called Community for a Safe Graduation, because yeah, it takes a lot of people and a lot of work and a lot of donations to make this happen, and our community steps up in a very big way every year.
Okay, so this graduation party is going to be on the 24th on Sunday, a week from yesterday. Is that right? Why don't you tell us about it? I know it involves lots of schools, lots of people, when it starts, all that stuff.
Okay. So, like you said, it's on Sunday, May 24th. The Juneau kids that are graduating this year are all graduating on Sunday. The graduations are happening at different times of the day, depending upon the school that they're graduating from. And then beginning at 10 o'clock at night, we start holding the big party. And that party will go on from 10 o'clock until 2:15 in the morning. And the reason we've chosen 2:15 is for the class of 2015.
Okay.
And all those seniors who are there at 215 will have a chance to win $2,015, and that is courtesy of Valley Medical Care. So that is the grand prize.
You've to have been involved with this party for a while now, right? You've seen it before.
Well, we haven't seen it before, but we've been involved for several months now, planning.
I'm just trying to get a picture of what it must look like. It's at Centennial Hall, right?
It is. It's at Centennial Hall, and we basically take over the entire hall for this party, and we're expecting about 400 kids to come. And so we're in dire need of parent involvement or community involvement in putting it on. But as far as the kids are concerned and what they might see that night, it should be really fun. We're going to have, it'll be a dance, so we'll have a DJ. The theme of the whole party is kind of a neon glow theme. And so we're encouraging the kids to wear neon or white because there'll be black lights. It'll show up really fun as they're out dancing and doing different things. There's going to be glow-in-the-dark ping pong. There's going to be a big bouncy house. There's this, like, bungee run thing. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like yet. But there's going to be a casino. There's going to be kind of a quiet room for those kids that want to be a little bit more mellow or just chat with their friends. There's going to be an artist's alley where there's caricatures and different little projects that they can do. There's a minute to win it game, so they can do these little kind of obstacle exercises sort of thing to win prizes. So and all night long, there's going to be opportunities to win prizes either through the games, and there's going to be opportunity to win prizes just via just being there kind of thing.
Okay.
And there'll be lots of food. Lots of restaurants in town are contributing food, and parents are bringing food, so it'll be a great time.
Remember at my high school party, once you got in, you weren't allowed to leave. Or you're allowed to leave, but you couldn't come back if you left. Is that true here?
That's actually the same here, okay. Right. So the kids can come in starting at 10, and then at 11 the doors will be closed for good as far as any new entries. And if a student does leave, then they can't come back in. That's true.
And students all need to bring their ID. And the event is free to seniors, and they are allowed to bring a guest. And from what I understand, it's $10 for a guest. And so we're expecting a full house.
And beyond the three big high schools, well, let's see, we have Thunder Mountain and JDHS and Yakus, mm-hmm. but it's also open to homeschool. Tell us more about who all is invited.
Right, all seniors in town. So we've reached out to the homeschool programs as well and invited those students.
Okay. So obviously, I think it's important for us to keep our high school kids safe. As parents, what have you been doing over the last couple of years? How have you been communicating with them about being safe?
Well, it's an ongoing process, and okay. communication is the key. I think that you kind of need to start communicating with them when they're really young, because then they might hear it over the years. Then they get it, and at some point, then you know you just trust that they know what's right and what's wrong and how to stay safe, and we're all going to be. Most of us are going to be sending them off to other cities soon, so we hope we prepared them well. And I know that they get a lot of advice from their coaches and their teachers and their schools, so I think our community is pretty invested in our kids, and everyone has an interest in seeing them succeed.
How about you, Kate?
No, I actually, Kristen said it really well. But it's true. I think that communication is a key, and you know, knowing about who they're hanging out with and what kinds of activities they're doing, and also, you know, doing activities with them. I know at least our family, we really like to get out and do a lot of things with our kids and invite other kids and stuff like that too. So that's for our family, that's helped.
And don't be afraid to communicate with other parents, too, because that's an important thing. We're not afraid to call each other and say, hey, do you know about this? So, yeah, I think that, you know, we're all invested in all these kids, so we're watching out for them.
And what can a community member do to help support safe choices for high school students? besides maybe come and volunteer at this party.
Right,
come and volunteer, yeah. Well, you know, this would probably be a good time to talk about some of the sponsors for this activity, because not only is it parents and individuals, but we have a lot of corporate sponsors for this event. Valley Medical Care, as I said, is the grand prize sponsor of the $2,015. Bowinkles is giving a pizza to every single senior in town, which is pretty great. We have Alaska Litho, Alaska Marine Lines, Alaska Travel Adventures, Aurora Project, First Impressions, Bartlett Regional Hospital, the City and Borough of Juneau, Gastineau Guiding, LJ Alarm, Morris Engineering, Sea Alaska, Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority, Hecla Greens Creek, Holland America, Princess Cruises, Juneau Central Labor Council, and Public Policy Consulting. And those are just the sponsors who've contributed over $500 to this event. So we have pages of sponsors, individuals and businesses.
Okay. If somebody does want to volunteer or contribute more to this celebration, how can they do that?
So we've set up a website, and that website is junosafegrad.weebly.com. Weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y. Otherwise, junosafegrad.weebly.com. Anyways, on that website, it talks about the event. It also, there's a place that if you wanted to help sponsor the event, we are asking all families to help if they can, that have a senior that's graduating or any upcoming families as well. And then, but anybody can go to that, and there's a link to where they can sponsor part of Juno Safe Grad. Additionally, on that website, there's one of our huge needs right now is we're kind of getting really close to the actual event. The majority of the planning has happened, but we really need volunteers. We need volunteers to help set up on the day of it. So it's occurring at Centennial Hall. And if you remember that every parent that It's the graduation day of their child. So they're pretty busy on that day. Yet at the same time, we're trying to set up for this big event. So we're looking to kind of even kind of expand beyond our senior class parents to also get volunteers from the lower grades as well, or community members if they can, or maybe past volunteers that know what it should look like set up, because this is our first time. And so anyways, they can go to our website and they can pick a slot from the, just click on the volunteer tab, and then they can pick a slot that they can come in. And we have some lead people that'll kind of guide them as to what they need to do on the particular day. But in the morning time, I know that there are some slots, morning and like right till noon. And then we kind of have to give it up because Yakusa is actually holding their graduation at Centennial Hall in the afternoon. So they get a slight preview of everything that's there. And then everybody comes back at 10 o'clock.
Okay. And give us that website once more, please, Kate.
That website is junosafegrad.weebly.com.
Okay.
And there's also a link to that site on the front page of the Juneau School District website. So if you look under links, you'll see Parents for Safe Graduation.
All right. Kate Prussing, Kristen Bartlett, thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
Anything we're missing you want to add?
Students, be there by 11. Bring your ID and a friend and have a great time. And congratulations.
That's right.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Scott.
This is Bird Note. Can birds tell who their relatives are? Recently, researchers at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden tried to find out. But first, a bit of background. Female birds of some species try to save energy by tricking others of the same species into incubating their eggs. They're known as brood parasites. If a bird incubates the eggs of unrelated females, she has more babies to care for, but gains no genetic benefits. If the eggs are laid by a close relative, though, the host may gain by favoring the spread of genes they share. To try to discern whether birds can tell the difference, researchers filmed interactions at 65 nests of the common eider duck. They recorded whether there were fights when a female other than the owner of a nest tried to lay an egg there. and it turns out that close relatives caused no aggression. But an unrelated female often did cause conflict if she tried to lay an egg there. So, female eiders appear to act differently toward close relatives. Exactly how they recognize them, though, remains unknown. Today's show, brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 8 minutes until the top of the hour.
Is it the Rock Dog? I host Cross Currents on 102.7 on your dial, FM, KRNN. I tune into KRNN because it represents one of the things we fight for in this country, freedom of expression. I love the variety of shows, a variety of personalities. Tune into KRNN 102.7 FM.
Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon today. I'll be your host again tomorrow, and we'll find out about the National Conference of the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society. We'll get a preview of Wednesday's concert with Molly Lewis and Marion Call. Meryl Jensen will be here to highlight this weekend's Alaska Public Gardens Day. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, BirdNote, music, and more, live at 3 on KTOO. Repeated at 4 on KRNN and online via ktoo.org. It's currently 71 degrees at the Juneau Airport. As for the forecast tonight, it's going to be partly cloudy, lows around 49. And tomorrow, Tuesday, partly cloudy, highs around 67 with light winds. Wednesday, partly cloudy, highs around 68. And Thursday through Saturday, partly cloudy, highs around 68. And going into Sunday, even partly cloudy, lows around 50, highs around 66. And looks like mostly cloudy for Memorial Day, highs around 65. Stay tuned for the news.